Ah, another day in the wasteland. You know, I do miss our Bondcast episodes. Feels like it's been ages since our last get-together. Hopefully our next episode will... Oh, what's this? Play me. Wonder who sent this. Well, it's also peculiar, but... Okay, mysterious tape, show me what you've got!
My dear Apocalypse Video, two cases of Mountain Dew Live Wire, numbers 456 and 457, which were aboard a Morton Hoof's convoy, are now in the possession of the Terra people. Unless within the next 24 hours your management debuts a new Bondcast episode on Thunderball, we shall begin to destroy one can of Mountain Dew Live Wire an hour. Please signal your acceptance of our terms by arranging to have the episode dropped into our Swiss podcasting app no later than 6 p.m. this Saturday, Greenwich Mean Time. Instructions on where to access our eventual downvotes and negative comments will follow. Have a nice day.
My God, this is serious! Chad! Get me Agents Mike and Jackie! No, wait! Truly unprecedented. I'm afraid two agents aren't going to cut it. Call in Agent Hoof as well. Hurry, Chad. We haven't any time to waste. The Bondcast is back.
James Bond is in operation. And what an operator he is in Ian Fleming's Thunderball.
Have you seen everything you came to see? Now go back to your friends and report. Tell them the little fish I throw back into the sea.
Now move!
Thunderball stars Claudine Auger. Young, beautiful, trapped. Could be dangerous.
What sharp little eyes you've got.
Wait till you get to my teeth.
Adolfo Celli, smooth, silent. Spectre's agent of death. Luciana Paluzzi, lovely to look at, murderous to know.
Friends of yours, no doubt.
Come in.
007, danger sign for the world's most famous gentleman agent with a license to kill and license to thrill. 007, guarantee sign of prompt delivery, night and day service. Ravishing redheads. Bronze brunettes. Honey blondes. The Bond women, 007 style. Double O seven, hallmark of today's greatest entertainment.
All right, that was Thunderball. I'm your host and man whose needs are more, so I give less, Dave. And I'm joined again by a man who always runs while others walk, Agent Michael.
He wants it all.
That's beautiful.
I think that was a line from the song. I'm not really sure.
We're also joined by Agent Jackie, who acts while other men just talk.
Dave does not drink, does not smoke, does not make love. What do you do, Dave?
Hey, my needs are more, so I give less, okay? And finally, they call him the winner who takes all, Nick and Morton Hoof.
Hello.
Okay, so I guess Nick's needs are less. He doesn't need to give a big intro. Hello.
Hi.
Now, I've called Agent Hoof in on this assignment because he has unique intel that may prove useful on this episode. So, Nick, why don't you start us off by telling us your history with Thunderball?
Well, my history, that was one of the first Bond movies I had watched back when I did watch them, because I watched them in order, so I guess that would have been the fourth one. And that was in the early days of us using Letterboxd, and you saw my rating for Thunderball, and it like caused a kerfluffle.
Kerfuffle?
Yeah, very controversial rating of 4 stars. Wow. Because I liked it a lot when I saw it, and then Dave and I got into it, and like, oh, you've never seen any of these? Let's talk about them. And so Dave and I have a history of watching all of them.
Did Dave make you watch all the Bond movies too?
Yeah, I watched them all. And so Thunderball
is such a strong word, Mike.
Because when we watch them, I don't know if you've seen the movie Clockwork Orange, Nick. that's kind of what it's like over here.
Dave wasn't as advanced in his brutality yet, so he didn't quite pull out those stops. But yeah,
I prefer the word coerced. That's all.
That one's not as much a crime.
Why was a 4-star rating? Because Dave, if there's one thing I know about Dave is that he loves James Bond, and Thunderball
hates sharks.
Is like I did know a little bit about Thunderball going in. This is like the first James Bond movie that was made, kind of when he's already like basically as big as the Beatles, right? Like Goldfinger makes him as big as the Beatles. So this is like the first one coming out after that. It's like it was the most expensive one. So it's kind of like the pulling out of the stops. So knowing that and knowing that Dave loves these movies, why on earth was a seemingly innocuous, like it was good, 4-star rating a kerfuffle? What happened? Was it too low? Was it too high?
Intro, this almost sounds like you're setting up the intro to like a serial podcast or something, you know?
Why
went wrong? Well, here's the thing. I love all the Bond movies, even the ones I would say are not that great. I feel like they all have qualities or moments that I can latch onto that are fun or silly or whatever.
With one exception.
Well, no. I enjoy Thunderball, but out of all the Connerys, okay. The thing about Thunderball, it's a little sleepy at times. In fact, anytime they go underwater and that slow music kicks in, do 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 do, it's like a warm glass of milk. It just lulls me to sleep. Every time. Mike, Jackie, I don't know about you guys, but am I the only one
so
here?
So Dave and I are like opposites here, because that's like what I love
that's
the
what
most
keys
about
you
this
up.
Movie.
That's when you perk up.
I love the underwater stuff. It's just so cool to me.
I did like the underwater stuff, but you know me, I'm already the sleepiest in the room at the best of times. So, but I... When I rewatched the very end with that big underwater fight, I did find it very exciting when everyone starts knife fighting underwater. But it's kind of goofy, and I think that's why I enjoyed it.
It is, well, that is a unique exception, because the music playing in that particular underwater scene is da 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 da,
and there's like 50 dudes in like flippers, and again they're. Knife fighting underwater and shooting harpoons at each other and et cetera, et cetera.
If we're
James
ranking
Bond, James Bond doing pranks, like putting things on the back of people's tanks and all that.
If we're ranking these via sleepiness, From Russia with Love is way higher than Thunderball for me.
That was way more
boring. And that's fair. That's fair. I can understand that stance.
So I guess maybe we should get into the movie. I don't want to like tip your... Paying too much, Dave, but you must really hate this movie then.
No, I enjoy this movie. It's just the underwater. I find the underwater scenes boring and sleepy.
What would you have given this on Letterboxd?
I probably would have. You guys are probably going to yell at me for this.
3.5.
I'm pointing a harpoon gun at you as we speak.
No, I would give it 3.5.
Oh my god. I can see why this caused a kerfuffle.
Yeah, you see Nick go for 4, and you're like, hey, meet me in the pit.
Well, no, it's just everything
else.
Meet
me in the shark tank.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of, for me, it's like, I don't know. My you can't really take my grades to heart, or my letter grades, or my star ratings, whatever, to heart, because I love all the Bond movies. So even the bad ones, I kind of enjoy. So the water scenes notwithstanding, I mean, I have other problems with this movie, but I think the thing that this movie has in spades is style. Like, I mean, you could tell when you're watching this movie, like, oh, wow. So we thought Goldfinger looked expensive. This movie looks way more expensive.
It does look a lot more like the $9 million they spent on this movie is on the screen.
Yeah, and how much did we say Goldfinger cost? That was like only $3 million? I think it was three.
They spent
nine on this, and it's just like it costs more than the previous three films combined, and it made more. And it's just
Goldfinger was $3 million.
Yeah, so the money is on the screen, and ironically, that's kind of one of the sort of problems I have with the movie is that it kind of just feels like James Bond is on vacation in this movie.
He loves scuba diving. Yes.
You know, this is kind of this is kind of messing around.
I feel like this is the first, if I may use the term, post gadget James Bond. Where every other Dr. No from Rushed with Love and Goldfinger has been an escalation in gadgets, right? Like, I think there isn't any gadgets in Dr. No. He starts to get them from Rushed with Love.
Yeah.
And by Goldfinger, he's all tricked out. But they all have this, like, arc for the gadgets of, like, explaining the gadgets in the beginning of the movie and, like, setting up each specific gadget that will be used. And it's kind of cool because it's like a Chekhov's gun that you know is going to go off. Like, you know he's going to use the ejector seat in Goldfinger at some point. But this is the first one that it reminds me of the who's the Pierce Brosnan Bonds, where it's just, we're not explaining these gadgets. He has every just things. We're not setting anything up. He has it if it's useful. He's got a jetpack in the first, like, few minutes of the movie.
You're right about the jetpack, but I do like that, the Q scene with Bond and Q, where you got Q in vacation wear, which is perfect, and Bond just being like, I don't give a fuck. Like, what's this thing? I'm going to turn it on and off just to annoy you. Like, I like that bit.
Here we have a Geiger counter. Useful and unobtrusive. The sweep hand takes the radioactivity count. It's waterproof, of course.
But of course.
Now, here's something I want you to use with special care. With special care.
Everything you give me.
Treat it with equal contempt. Yes, I know, but that's an underwater camera. It takes 8 pictures in rapid succession by pressing that button there.
Is that clever?
But if you can take pictures in the dark with an infrared film, yes. Try to be a little less than your usual frivolous self, 007.
James Bond's like a kid in a car that's like playing with the automatic locks.
Yeah, and he's like turning the lights on and off, and his dad's just like, if you don't fucking cut that out. Oh my God.
His gadgets are like, I don't know if I necessarily dislike this approach, but it is the first one where it's like, it's an escalation.
Here he is. He's got his jetpack.
He got a jetpack. Within like a few seconds, he uses the jetpack. Then he uses like a screen, basically. Just a little brick-like wall comes up to block bullets.
Oh, yeah.
And then he has like a fire hose in his exhaust, which is like the dumbest thing. Like, why didn't they just stand to the left? I don't understand I'm skeptical of the fire hose effectiveness.
Well, to be fair to be fair to the bulletproof rear screen, that was present in Goldfinger. Oh. I don't know if you remember, but that was there. And the water hoses, it seems like Q must have swapped out the oil slick with water hoses. Because I don't think it was water hoses in Goldfinger. So that was
they're
a
like
swap.
Giant tanks of water in the car?
Yeah. High-powered, pressurized.
What I love most about this opening scene is that I wish we could have a scene where we see James Bond awkwardly place the jetpack like outside of the building.
He's
first.
He's prepping it.
Never leave
like,
home
without. Okay, I'll place this here. I won't place it right next to the door where I'll be conceivably exiting. I'm going to place it a ways away from the door.
Yeah, I'm going to run for it.
It's funny, too, that he just uses the jetpack to like just go like whoop. He doesn't go very far in the jetpack.
I know. He goes like maybe what, like 50 yards or something. And what's so stupid, like, it comes off like, because like I said, it seems odd that he places it so far away from the door. Like, it almost feels like a video game moment where you're running and then you see like a thing that you need and you pick it up. It's just there out.
A Mario power up.
He's like, oh, actually, this isn't my jetpack. I just found it here. I guess I'll use it. Cool.
No well-dressed man should be without one.
Yes, very practical.
But it's definitely like post-Goldfinger, post-craziness, like, who cares? You know what I mean? It's just like, we just throw crazy shit in there, and if it looks cool, then it's okay.
Absolutely. That's the rule. It's the rule of Bond.
I was going to transition, but this is not cool. The moment when so the movie opens with a funeral. And they're the initials
for JB
on the casket. You're like, whoa?
Who could that be?
James Bond's dead.
We find out, no, James Bond is not dead. He's just at a funeral for a guy, Jack Bouval. And I guess he's just attending, like, you know, this bad guy's funeral. He's just for more intel.
He's like, something's gonna happen with the widow, and I'm gonna punch her in the face, whether or not she's the guy in disguise.
Do you think he showed up to Goldfinger's funeral?
Yeah, because he's a professional. He wanted to see if he would be buried in a gold casket, and he was.
I wonder what they put in the casket since she was shucked out of the plane.
Just a bunch of gold.
It's just a bunch of gold, yes.
Damn.
They all...
At least there's an open bar.
Instead of throwing flowers or dirt, they all threw, like, little gold coins on his casket. Like, ding, ding.
It's what he would have wanted. And he did specify that's what he wanted.
Yes.
And he made all of his underlings sign, like, a contract that they would go to his stupid funeral.
Q helped make the golden casket, too. So it was a team effort.
They're all staunch professionals.
Anyway, Bond's at this funeral for this guy that killed a couple of MI6's agents, and he follows them, and he notices that the widow of the guy who died opens the car door by herself.
Women
what?
Can't do that.
And that's
the
all
gas.
Women's arms are too weak.
I think that stunt alone was two of the $9 million.
And this is like one of the big Austin Powers moments from this movie, where later on he's like, "You're a man, baby," punches him in the face.
Madame, I've come to offer my sincere condolences.
And they proceed to have a fight that is so sped up, like, it was making my head spin.
I love that fight because they're just, like, destroying this room. They're, like, throwing 100%. Anything they can.
Yeah, they just break everything.
Single thing in the room.
That also was giving me, like, Austin Powers vibes or just some parody where it's such a ridiculous scene because it's so sped up. It's, like, cut weird where you're, like, missing, like, several seconds of the fight. And they're so obviously more interested in wrecking this room
and
than
causing
property
damage.
Yeah.
Great.
And there's so much in the room to wreck. It's, like, comically filled up with, like, fragile.
That's the best. I love that kind of gag where, like, we're in the China shop. Don't break it. I'm going to break everything. We're breaking everything.
He even, like, wraps the guy up in the curtains and throws him down to the ground. They use everything in the room.
He takes the flowers out and just throws them on the body. And he's like, I got to make one more mess real quick. Suck you.
I'm surprised he didn't, like, pee on him or something. It's like,
he's
like,
I got time. I can take a piss.
Jesus, Bond.
Bond, you went a little too far. That got weird.
We can't condone this. You need to go on vacation now.
Remember in Dr. No when the big fight scene at the beginning was just like they pull over on the side of the road and he like punches a guy?
He was like out in one punch.
And puts him in the back seat of the car.
Yeah. We've come a long way, baby.
Yeah, that was only three or four years prior to this?
Wild.
It's insane, like, the amount. It's just insane to me that through 1962 through 1965, there was a Bond movie every year. That's wild.
That is nuts.
It just makes me wonder how they could have possibly done that. Like, imagine nowadays if like, you know, there was a Mission Impossible movie every year. It's like, I can't fathom it.
Yeah, or a Bond movie every year.
Well, and the wild thing is, it's like, it's not like, you know, they had made these movies prior, like for the, like the past prior 10 years. Like, no, they literally crank these movies out once a year. It's just insane to me.
Yeah. Because he's bigger than Jesus, because they got us.
We're almost done with the Connery run here. And I'm wondering, like, do you think, is anyone feeling like, to me, he's still feeling like in it. But I'm wondering, like,
this is probably him at his peak, I think, as far as him, like, enjoying the role and just, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I've heard, just because I've heard towards the end, he does sort of, like, seem like he's over it on the screen. And I don't think we're there yet.
Well, because I'm trying to picture this in the timeline. Maybe they went to like the Goldfinger premiere. I'm wondering like the timeline. Like, did Goldfinger come out while they were making Thunderball, or like I'm just kind of curious what the timeline is, because I'm trying to gauge like the level of Beatles-esque popularity he would be encountering. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he still seems in it in Thunderball. So it makes me wonder if they were doing Thunderball maybe like right after they wrapped on Goldfinger, or maybe right after it came out. Who knows? I'm wondering if he's still sort of in a bubble, sort of, like as far as the popularity, and it hasn't really affected him yet. Mm. I don't know. I guess we'll see. But it does look like he's having a good time, and I think the chief reason is the character is basically on vacation too, as is Sean Connery. It's like the whole movie he spends like in this like kind of like Hawaiian shirt type thing, you know, and he's very loose, very comfortable, even though there is literally, to get into the synopsis of the movie, there is literally a deadline for when Spectre is going to launch nuclear missiles at either a US or UK country or whatever. But
he's
but
just chilling.
He is he's just in chilling. Disguise.
What?
He is in disguise.
But I don't get a sense of urgency from him, like, oh shit, like Spectre's got some nukes and they're gonna launch them at this time.
No meanwhile way. He's it's being like very I can just strategic chill. He doesn't want to rush things and blow his cover.
Also, I don't know if you noticed this, but there's some hot ladies around, so...
Yeah, so like basically like after that funeral scene, there's like a scene where he's in MI6. He's been like called to a fancy meeting and they're like, yeah, Spectre is going to be, like, launching nukes, and...
Is this before or after he assaults that woman?
After.
Okay, because that is... I will say this movie does a little bit better overall with, you know, avoiding that, but we do open with that, you know.
Well, he does... Oh, you know what? I should take this word back, because I'm about to... He coerces a woman.
Okay, well, that's still a crime. Still bad.
It's very uncomfortable to watch. Well, and you're just
yeah, like, so, the resort?
Yeah, where he like forcibly kisses a struggling woman who then pushes him away, but then they have sex like 2 minutes later. So it's okay.
Somebody's going to wish the day had never happened.
Well, you wouldn't tell Dr. Wayne. Please, I'd lose my job.
Well, I suppose my silence could have a price.
You don't mean... Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no. So really cool, chill stuff. Maybe that's why I, like, I don't know, I'm so relieved by the time we get to, like, Domino, who, you know, has, like, a just a cute kind of normal name and get up and isn't called, like, just, like, pussy anything. Which I'm just a big fan of, so...
Well, I guess you have a unique name. It's not particularly sexy, but oh, it is clever.
You've got just a kind of cute name based on your actual name. Huh, I can work with that, I guess. I don't know. Fine. So
that scene in the... I don't know, it's like a spa resort or whatever. It stood out to me even more this time when he does that to the woman. But what I don't... I'm pretty sure I'm giving them too much benefit of the doubt, but... There is the scene where he, and Dave always thinks this is so goofy, when he get, and it kind of is when he gets strapped to the stretching machine.
Oh my God, that was so dumb.
So.
Nice to have met you, Mr. Bond.
Hey, what the hell? Hey, come on. Hey, come on.
Come on.
You could have been killed.
I must be 6 inches taller.
Oh, you poor dear.
What I was noticing, though, is that the imagery of him, I don't know, getting stretched is reminiscent of him getting potentially raped by another man. And
yeah, no,
so,
it's like a sexually violent kind of thing. This whole resort is like, has all these weird gadgets that you can turn up to lethal.
Yeah, this resort, the options on all of these equipment are like, do you want it to do resort stuff or do you want to die?
Yeah. Do you want like a gentle massage or steam bath, or do you
that
want to be murdered?
BDSM club.
There's like a little skull on like the far, like the bottom part of the
don't
gauge.
Don't turn it up to this one.
So there's like the stretcher that has the option to basically like kill you.
To like break your
and
spot.
Then there's this like heater, like sauna thing that has the option to turn it up to like to death.
To levels. Melting.
And that you can lock from the outside, too.
Well, he puts a broom it. In the handle so
even
it can't
so,
open.
Even so,
yeah.
We should make it so people air. Can't get trapped in these.
Well, that's also, I kind of choke that up to 60s technology, you know, because it's like, I can't imagine going to like a health spa and getting into like something that encloses you to the neck. That is terrifying.
Yeah.
That reminds me of like those pictures you see on Reddit of like kids' safety car seats from like the 50s and 60s. God. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah. Or yeah, any kind of like diet kind of thing where it's like, just strap this electrical diode to your tummy.
Exactly.
It kind of, if you haven't seen the movie, it kind of looks like an iron lung.
It does.
Yes, yes.
But in a nice, chill, healthful way.
So,
anyway.
What's going on in this resort? Like, I was a little confused. Like, why is he here? And who's, like, there's, like, back and forth.
He's, like, off duty. He really is just, like, decompressing
he's
after.
He's just recuperating, yeah.
And is that where he just happens to meet the wife of the big bad guy of Thunderball?
He meets Thunderball. No, he,
I just want to point out, Thunderball is not a person.
No, it's Mr. Thunderball.
Is Largo not also a.k.a. Thunderball?
A.k.a. Mr. Thunderball. I forget what Thunderball refers to in this movie. But, he's, like, off duty at, you know, killer resort, and then he happens to see like some specter guy basically, and when he tries to call it in to Moneypenny, she's like, you're not at work right now, like I'm not taking orders from you.
Nothing.
Fuck you.
Yeah, she says file it till you get back.
Yeah,
like,
just
oh.
Do your own shit, how about that, bye.
Well, and that's what Bod,
which like, is actually like really irresponsible because this is like the CIA level security, and he's coming in to report something. Is like, oh, well, we can wait.
Bin Laden's here at this resort.
You're on vacation. How about you chill out?
Well, I don't think he calls it in because he notices like the guy has that he like traps in the iron lung has like a tattoo, and he's kind of curious about it. I don't think he necessarily knows it's Spectre yet.
It
just looks funky.
It might just be some guy's tattoo.
Is the chain of events that Bond is on the stretcher? This guy with the tattoo comes and speeds up the stretcher, mm-hmm. and then Bond, like a Looney Tunes character, to get back at him, traps him in the heat up.
Yes.
Well, and it's after, yeah, like, there, like Bond's getting a massage, and he notices this guy come in, and he notices the tattoo, and he says his name is James Bond, and that's a problem because he says his name everywhere he goes.
He's telling everybody his name. This
There's
guy
like
can't
one,
shut the fuck up.
One scene where he uses a fake name, if I recall right.
Yeah, so and since this guy, we find out later, is an agent of Spectre, he's like, oh shit,
James Bond.
He's like our arch nemesis.
Yeah. Oh, hello, Bond. James Bond, 007, MI6, secret agent.
Seriously. Is it Domino a little later in the movie or the evil redhead who's like, hello, Mr. Bond, James Bond, like says it like that?
That's Vulpa, Agent Vulpa, who is one of my favorite characters in this movie because I mentioned this on the last episode. Later on in the movie, he tries to seduce her and he thinks he does, but then she's like, psych, I'm actually evil.
She does have that great line where she's like, oh, I'm going to like turn to the good side now that you gave me some dick. Fuck you. He's like, bye.
But of course, I forgot your ego, Mr. Bond. James Bond, who only has to make love to a woman
and she starts to hear heavenly choir singing. She repents and immediately returns to the side of right and virtue. But not this one. What a blow it must have been. You having a failure.
Well, you can't win them all.
I like their back and forth. Like, there's like yeah. One of my favorite scenes in this movie, and it is admittedly very pervy, but it's funny as well, is when he walks in on her in the bathroom taking a bath, and she's like, would you mind giving me some clothes, please? And he just sort of like coyly takes like her sandals and throws it down in front of her. And this is so pervy. This is like to the nth degree pervy. He just sits down in this seat and just kind of waits for her to talk about the bath, and it's just like, oh my God.
I kind of like that too. She just kind of like rolls her eyes and she's like, okay.
What if she just shot him right there? It's like, no, I'm not playing this game. She pulls like
actually,
a pistol out for the
I'm,
water.
I'm
like,
going to skip the middleman here. I'm just going to kill you.
He's sitting like, on the chair.
He's busy just like looking at her tits and she's just like, bam.
End of credits.
That would be
James Bond will not return.
James Bond was killed. James
and then
Bond
it just
dead.
Shows him showing up with the De Beers diamonds. He's getting the loot.
Because I love the look she gives him in this moment. She's like, are you serious right now? Just like, oh my God. Like, you're worse than your file suggests. Oh, Lord.
I heard you suck, but like, wow.
It's like, I'm going to really enjoy killing you later.
First, I'm going to have sex with you, and then I'm going to kill you.
She would have been like an excellent, this is kind of a spoiler for GoldenEye. That's way off into the into the far future. But there's a character in that movie who strangles people with her thighs during sex. This would have been,
women.
This would have been a prime opportunity for Vulpa to like somehow kill Bond during sex. That would have been awesome.
She should have tried.
Or
given her that.
Or she could have hooked him up to that, the machine from earlier in the movie. Like, hey, I'm a little kinky. You want to try out this? No, I don't want to try out.
Hey, you like getting your spine stretched out, Mr.
I've
Bond?
I've had a bad experience on the stretcher before.
I have back problems. I don't know. I have a very risky lifestyle.
Well, we're kind of jumping all around here because this movie is wild, but I think it's time we introduce the movie's key villain, Emilio Largo, a.k.a. number two.
Mr. Thunderball.
Mr. Thunderball himself.
Mr. Thunderball.
Nick, you really, I remember when you and I used to talk about this movie, you really latched on to Largo as a villain.
Oh, were you pro-Largo?
Yeah, definitely pro Largo. He's a very typical villain. Love
he's got
the eye
patch. Yep.
I do love. The eye patch. I love like when you see him. I leaned over to Jackie during the screening, and I was like, "Do you think that guy's gonna be the bad guy?"
I really liked at the big underwater battle at the end. Whenever they cut to him, and he's wearing like the scuba gear and the mask and everything, you still just see the eye patch under the mask. That's really funny to me.
It's an interesting intro to like him, like the first time you see him.
He's double parking.
Like, hey, you.
He also has pet sharks that he feeds people to.
Oh.
He's got it all.
Largo is just delightfully cartoonish, and I love it. Like, this movie is cartoonish. Like, I would say more so than Goldfinger.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah, I mean, when you've got that many people in flippers and it's going to be
shark
goofy.
Pit.
If there's a shark pit, it's going to be goofy.
But yeah, I like the intro to Largo. I think it's the first time you see him when he's parking, and you just like see him. So he's parking on like a London street. He gets out of the car and he goes to like this like boring office, and he's kind of like making small talk with the people in the office. And he goes to his room and punches some code, and there's like the loudest ever, like door unhinging.
Several doors of just like...
When that happens, I imagine everyone in that whole office building is like, what's going on?
He's doing his thing again.
This is one of my favorite villain intros in a Bond movie, because he walks in, and the big thing about him is he's parking in a no parking zone. And then he just walks in, he's got his coat, and he's just sort of walking, and he walks into what looks like a community outreach center or something. I don't know exactly what this place is.
It looks like a boring government office building, but then the reveal is so cool, because it's not like he has a little secret lab or anything. It's a whole gigantic room that is where Spectre is. Like, he's not even the leader of. Like, he's number two. He's number two. One of the agents. And number one is Johnny Spectre, I guess. Or is that Blofeld?
Yes. Johnny Spectre himself.
I think you're thinking of James Bond Jr., Mike. That sounds like something that'd be maybe in James Bond Jr.
James Bond Jr.
Johnny Spectre. We
Johnny
meet again.
Spectre here. I'm American and I have a dog, not a cat.
But yeah, so there's a great scene of like all the Spectre agents, which is reminiscent of the Goldfinger scenes where he's got the boardroom, but I think this is the first time we've seen like meetings of Spectre.
I mean, this is Austin Powers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, the great scene where, of course, like the different agents are just reporting in, and like right away, like Blofeld's like unhappy with one of the reports, and just like, I don't know what happened to him, but he killed him on the chair somehow.
No, the guy was embezzling.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't know what happened as far as like how he killed him. He just like pressed a button and he like died.
It seemed like an electric chair.
Well, there's like an explosion, so.
He just set off some fireworks on the guy.
And I love that like he does that and then he like lowers, you know, of course, presses the button to lower the chair down, and it comes back up and the body's not on it and it's all like gross. It's so dumb, but it's good.
Number one, I don't mean to interrupt, but could we maybe do something about the charred flesh smell? It's very upsetting.
Could someone light a candle, perhaps?
Can we take like a 5-minute break so the cleaning crew
air
can
out
come
the
in
room
here?
A little bit?
An air freshener, number one. of course, there's the great thing. It goes without, it's easy to take for granted, but that like number one, you don't see his face. Like you only see,
love
like his
this.
Face is like blurred out.
Well, it's not even blurred out. They literally just have like some shades drawn just below
his.
Yeah, he's got his blinds drawn just enough so you can only see him petting his cat. He's like, well, everyone should see my cat.
Well, it's just so goofy because I'm like, any one of those guys could just quickly run up and peer under like, oh, I know what he looks like now.
What are you going to do with that? You'd be like, oh, he looks like a guy.
You... As a former evil leader, I can speak to that. The henchmen would never have the audacity to risk their lives by doing that.
That's good. But there is something just inherently funny about this guy who just has the blinds drawn down just below his. The setup of it is just so funny to me that he just, why not just have yourself enclosed off completely? Just like, but no, he's like, no, just bring him down. Like,
well, then you wouldn't see the cat.
Yeah, that's literally all it is just to see the guy's cat.
You wouldn't get his whole vibe if he draw the blinds completely.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
They won't know that he has a kitty cat.
I guess that is itself a power move. Like he, like Nick said, like he trusts that his guys don't have the audacity to just run up real quick and peer under the blinds to look at him. I don't know. It's just a funny image to me that you just, it's like, I'm just imagining all the work that went into like, no, I want it on a preset. I want it set down to come this low. You know, just, I don't know. Just something about the blinds, just the whole setup is just goofy to me in the best way. It's almost as if it would have been funny if he just took like a little thing, like he was holding up like one of those fans, but it's just blocking out his face. So he just turns so that you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just a like, now I'm getting my big mug of coffee, right?
Yes, exactly.
And now I'm going to check my newspaper.
Like, honestly, I'm surprised they didn't
like
do
Charlie
this in
Brown's
Austin Powers
parents too. Or whatever.
Yes.
Is this the scene where they like reveal like, okay, so number two, you're going to get nukes and blow up the world?
Steal the nukes and do the shit and sounds good. I think so.
How much time do they give them? Is it like a week or a few days?
I don't know.
I don't remember the timeline, but I remember thinking throughout the whole movie that it's like, Bond, where is the sense of urgency here? Like, we're talking nukes.
Well, at a certain point, I think, like, MI6 is, like, they're... I think what it is is they find out pretty early on that... So, real quick, I think we need to, like, go over, like, a little bit more here. So, they're going to have this plan to use these nukes. MI6 finds out about it, calls the big meeting. They're going to assign different agents to different parts of the world because they don't know where this is happening. And they assign Bond to, I think, Alaska or, like, Canada, some, like, really cold place.
There's no babes in bathing suits.
Yeah, where you get the sense there's not going to be babes. And Bond,
he sees a picture of Bond, a hot girl.
Yeah, Bond is like, well, I was rifling through the mission materials, and I noticed there's a picture of a babe in the Bahamas.
So I think
I should investigate that instead.
They're like, okay, Bond.
I'm like, all right, yeah, go to the Bahamas.
The right here, real quick, the when all the agents are called to that meeting about the threat, Spectre has given them 7 days before they'll drop the nukes.
Well, and once Bond goes to the Bahamas, he finds out Largo's there and that Largo is going to be leaving there in a couple days. And I think that's the first, like, ticking time bomb, is that, like, Largo's there, he's got the nukes, and he's... Whatever's happening is, like, he's going to be leaving in a couple days.
And to be fair to Bond, he doesn't only notice that, a hot lady is in the dossier. The first thing he recognizes is, like, she's with her brother, who he noticed dead at the health place.
Yeah,
he's
had,
like, wait
reason.
A minute, I saw this guy dead, but you're saying that he checked in and, like, you know, there's a big part of the movie that we glossed
over. Reconstruction, like,
this movie is
switcheroo,
like every split other Bond movie. There has been an escalation in tech and gadgets, but there has also been an escalation in the convolutedness of these plot lines. There is so much going on in this movie.
So while Bond is at Shrublands recuperating in the beginning, there's another person there recuperating from facial reconstructive surgery.
They're getting a new face.
Francois Derval, or not Francois Derval.
Yes, and Derval is the brother of Domino, a.k.a. the hot lady who he sees in the picture.
Yeah, and that's what he's like, can I not go to somewhere cold? Can I go somewhere hot? Shakshi, maybe?
Maybe I could wear a sexy bathing suit?
I did buy some new flip-flops.
Instead of the remote cabin in outside of Fairbanks, I was wondering, the Bahamas.
Bahamas? You said, I could go there. Yeah.
Remember Dr. No? That was fun.
That was super fun. I can hang with my friend Felix. I'll punch him in the stomach.
I would like to sing Underneath the Mango Tree karaoke.
Yeah, I was just going
to
say that.
Are they still singing that that tune?
That
down
one
there?
Sweaty bar in Nassau.
Yes. I want to see if the thing that Quarrel and I carved into the bottom of the chair at that bar is still there.
It says Bond was here. I left some gum there, too. Anyway.
I also left the jetpack in the back, just in case.
Emma's just, like, staring at Bond.
Emma's like, you make me feel so fucking tired, dude. Just go.
Yes. Yeah, just like, James Bond is like, ew. I just imagine James Bond, like, reenacting, like, sex moments that he's had on his missions. And M is just like, dude... This is not pertinent to the dossier. I didn't ask.
It's like, I'll be honest, Bomb. There was no reason to have you go to Alaska. We're just trying to get you out of the picture here.
Trying to keep it in your pants since you can't.
Bond is definitely the type of guy at the office who's like, so, guys, I got really lucky last night. Let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. Everyone for sure at the office, like all the other MI6 agents, like, are talking mad shit about Bond.
Because they're all just like, oh, yeah, how was your weekend? Oh, yeah, me and my family, yeah, we took the kids to the zoo. It was really nice. And Bond comes in, he's like, smell my finger. Oh, Jesus Christ, dude. Come on. Stop it.
He was late to this meeting. They were all, like, waiting for him.
They were waiting for him, and they were like, I bet he's off having sex again.
Shows up drunk.
Au contraire, I was chased by a hot lady with rockets in her motorcycle.
Yeah, I bet you were, James. Okay, sure. Yeah.
We well, all know what rockets work in on the time. Motorcycle means. We know your euphemisms.
Yeah, we again.
I had to use my jetpack.
Okay, well, great. We've been having coffee together.
So. We've been waiting here for 3 hours in this giant room.
Johnson was telling us about the vacation he took to New York. It sounded really nice. Sounded really cool. So, but thanks for showing up.
Well, now that we're all here,
and this is and to speak to the inflated budget of this movie, it's like they have this meeting in the largest room I've ever seen.
Yeah, they're a far cry from the like the sets that are like falling apart.
Money Penny is like they're in the conference room. It's like this is the conference.
It looks
room?
Like it's in the Vatican or something.
Yeah.
It does. And then this is where they have the huge ass world map.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's
it.
The only room with the maps. So.
I mean, just, you know, vaulted ceilings, like everyone's sitting like 10 feet apart from each other, this giant circle. It's insane.
It does. The Vatican is I was thinking, like, is this like in like Buckingham Palace or something?
Yeah.
You know, the Queen's in the next room. They're like, please don't come in yet. I guess it's a little
king at this
point.
We can't get Bond anywhere near the Queen.
That would not go well.
Oh, Lord.
But there's a moment in this room where, and I think it's that first time we see it, but they unveil the videotape or the audio recording. And then when they show the giant ass map, they're like, oh, this is where they could have flown. That's all we have.
No.
And it's just the range, briefest news update. And just it's so funny that just like, that's all we have.
Yeah, bring out the biggest map that exists. And I don't know, it's probably somewhere in this area. We don't really know.
So they know that basically like, a major city in the U.S. or the U.K. is going to be bombed unless they pay Spectre £100 million. And
which for 1965 is an astronomical amount of money.
Sure.
Yeah.
And also the threat of bombing is, you know,
I mean,
deal.
I think that like we mentioned in the Goldfinger episode, I'm pretty sure adjusted for inflation, that's like over $1 billion. So that's.
Yeah. Well, I think pounds were like twice the value of the dollar at the time around there. So like the Bond movie would have been like 4.5 billion pounds. So think of how many Bond movies this could finance.
So many. Spectre's like, we're taking over creatively.
The franchise.
We want to make a James Bond movie one a year for 5 years.
Holding up a harpoon gun to Broccoli or whatever his name is.
Yeah. Yes. We have bought the rights.
Blofeld is actually Albert Broccoli.
Yeah.
That would be funny. So yeah, then he goes to the Bahamas and there. I feel like they even are like, okay, James, if you go to the Bahamas, like, please have some urgency. Don't just dilly-dally. And he dilly-dallies.
And he dilly-dallies. Because guess what? There's a hot lady wearing a white bathing suit. I guess the first time we see her, she's in a black bathing suit. I'm once again, like, kind of pleasantly surprised at, like, obviously Domino is, like, really beautiful and sexy and everything, but that, like, her costuming, much like the name, like, never goes too cartoonish. It's just kind of like she wears black and white and she wears bathing suits because she's in the Bahamas and she swims, and it's not like, you know, too over the top.
And basically like he finds the girl in the picture like really quickly,
and she is the mistress of
and she
Marco.
Gets her foot stuck underwater. One of the first like underwater scenes we have. Bond saves her and then is just like, since he knows who she is like, well, what are you doing tonight? Blah, blah, blah. And finds out that she is like with Largo. And then the plot unravels. And this begins like a weird relationship. I kind of love it. The relationship between Bond and Largo, where like they know who each other are and they're actively trying to kill each other, but also like, yeah, well, come over to my house.
Yeah,
let me show
their
you around.
Cat and mouse.
Well, like,
thing.
There's a moment when, like, he walks up to Largo in the casino, and he says like the dumbest line. He's like,
"Yes, I thought I saw a specter at your shoulder."
What do you mean?
The specter of defeat. That your luck was due to change.
We'll soon find out.
There's a specter on your shoulder.
Yeah, it's like, well, I guess it's your specter against mine. I'm not James Bond. I'm not 007.
He says he's James Bond.
Specter of defeat.
He says, like, oh, hey.
By the way, I'm James Bond. Bond.
By Looks the way, like I'm James Bond. I'm a shadow of 007. I killed Dr. No and Goldfinger.
I don't know what the UK has instead of...
enemies.
I don't know what the UK has instead of social security cards, but if you would like the equivalent, I can give you that information.
But yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, I know who you are, you jerk. You know who
hey,
I am.
And I know that you stole some nukes, so just, what are we doing?
It's kind of the thing, one of the things I like about this movie is how playful their relationship is. And it's just, again, it's so
like
cartoony.
It.
Yeah, it's fun.
It is, and it's fun, yeah. And like...
Like, there's literally a scene where they're, like, skeet shooting together. They both have shotguns. Largo gives
that was
him
a, fun
a shotgun.
I want to ask about that shot. Like that's one of those ones where, honestly, maybe the coolest special effect in the whole thing. So they're skeet shooting, and you know, like by the beach or something, and like shooting up the things and shooting them or whatever. And Bond gets the gun and is like facing one way. They shoot it, and he like instantly turns around, just like fires and blows it up,
like from the hip.
It's like.
And he gets a little line off too when he does it. It's great.
What could be easier?
Perhaps you call one for me.
Of course. Paul!
Seems terribly difficult. No, it isn't, is it?
No.
It's like superhuman. And like, was that? It looked real. It looked like he really shot that.
I would imagine, like, maybe the skeet they sent out, it had like exploded, or like someone else off screen shot it, who knows. But
yeah, that's a good
but what I love point. Most about good, this series of events, like if someone's listening who's never seen Thunderball, it doesn't, you know, it's just I love how we went from they met in the casino to like, and then they're skeet shooting. So if like someone who's never seen this movie is listening to this, is they're thinking like, what are the chain of events? Do they like become best friends? Like
kind of a little bit. They got the same
taste
of women.
They are friendly.
They're best frenemies.
Yeah.
Ooh. Alternate title. Yeah, I like it.
They're holding harpoons to each other like, oh, I can't stay mad at you.
But that kind of... buddy? I mean, we joke, but that kind of is the series of events in this movie. Like, when he's not being best friends with Largo, he's out looking for the bombs or going underwater looking for things, like staking out Largo's boat, the Disco Volante, which is like this cool transformer boat. But that's kind of the movie. Like Bond is on vacation, essentially. He's hanging out with his best friend, Mr. Thunderball.
Mr. Thunderball.
Skeet shooting and all that, and like, you know, dancing with his girlfriend.
Playing with sharks.
You know, it's just like that's kind of the vibe of the movie. It's just him.
Felix shows up and he's in vacation wear too.
Oh yes. Yeah, speaking of Felix, we get yet another new Felix Leiter version.
Oh, 3. Is it another new one? I guess that's why I didn't recognize him when he first showed up, and then they start talking like, oh, it's Felix. Okay.
Well, it's probably because if you remember the last one, they cast like a 40-year-old man who looks like a 60-year-old man.
That's right.
Wearing a business suit. So in this one, they're like, we're in the Bahamas. We can't have that, like, you know, geriatric Felix in here, like, olding the place up.
Let's get a fun, hip, young yes. Felix. He wears a baseball cap and a tropical
sunglasses.
Shirt.
Yeah, I mean, this. I would say overall, this particular Felix is forgettable. But like, I think we did need a younger, hipper Felix for this particular mission.
Yeah, you don't want someone, you know, curbing Bond's style too much.
It would be if old Felix showed up in this movie with his freaking hat, you know, his fedora hat and his business suit at the cool hip casino on the beach. I mean, Bond would just be giving him
get out of here, old man.
Bond would be striving not to make eye contact. Like, he'd be putting his hand up like, oh god.
Hey, when I'm talking to babes later, pretend you don't know me.
Yes.
They're gonna see you and throw up, Felix.
Hey, but yeah, that's kind of the vibe of the movie, and that's, you know, it's kind of the chain of events, and I think one of the big bright moments of this movie, who we mentioned earlier, is Agent Volpa, the redheaded Spectre assassin, because I feel like she brings like an energy to this movie that is really fun, and it almost seems like a response to like the way that James Bond treats women in the previous movies. Like, I enjoy seeing a woman that can get one up on Bond in these movies, and it's not entranced by his charms. Like, she's like, no, I'm on a job. Like, you know what I mean?
She's like, yeah, I can fuck for work too, Bond.
Yes.
It's not hard.
Yes. And you mentioned it. One of my favorite lines in this movie is when she's like, Mr. Bond, James Bond. You know, when she's Bond, like slyly saying that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great.
Now look, you know we're going to be too late.
Too late for what?
The junk canoe. I promised my friends I'd meet them there. Perhaps you know them, the Largos.
Questions, questions, all I get is questions. But the music is gonna go on all night anyhow, enough to drive you wild.
Really?
Do you like wild things, Mr. Bond, James Bond?
Wild? You should be locked up in a cage.
And I did a little research on this actress. Her name is... Oh, I just lost it. Damn it. Her name is Luciana Pellucci, and she also starred in another movie a few years prior to this called, wait for it, No Time to Die. Produced by Albert Broccoli and directed by Terrence Young, who directed this movie. Boom!
How about that?
It's all connected. I should point out, No Time to Die was not a James Bond movie. It was a World War II tank movie. But I just thought that was super interesting, and I'm shocked that I never heard of that before.
Wait, No Time to Die? Like the...
What would later become a Bond movie, yeah.
That's wild.
And I got to admit, I'm just shocked that I would assume that, like, you know, when No Time to Die was coming out, there was, like... I would have figured there'd be some story like, yeah, Albert R. Broccoli, the mega producer of the Bond series, actually produced a movie called, like, is that where the title came from? I have never heard of this movie until now.
Someone just heard it and was like, that sounds like a good Bond movie.
It has to be,
yeah?
Right? Like, it can't be a coincidence that the producer of the Bond series.
That's not one of the books.
No, it's not. That can't be a coincidence, right? They had to pull the title from that.
Yeah.
It stars like someone who's in the Bond movie, directed by a Bond director, produced by Albert Broccoli. It's like the pieces are all there.
Well, we're almost an hour in here, and we haven't talked about the water in the room. So I think I'll say, like, I don't know what was in the water when they were making this movie, but it is like... Early on, you can tell there's a theme that they want a lot of underwater stuff happening. Mm-hmm. Like, even with the fire hoses, it's a little foreshadowing, I think.
Well, that
kind of
seems
wet,
like,
movie.
Yeah, it's like the water
is going to get wet.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like the water is, like, their big thing. Like, this is, like, them, like, you know, like, just dropping, you know, like, what am I trying to say here? It's like that Tom Cruise movie that I don't know if you guys remember, where he's like, we're shooting it. We're actually shooting it in space. Like, that's the big selling point. It's the same thing here. It's like, we're shooting it all underwater. You've never seen anything like this before.
Well, yeah, it's the original model for the Avatar movies. They did Way of Water, and, you know, but.
James,
you know,
Bond, The Way of Water.
Yeah, Shavako.
Thunderball set that precedent.
Absolutely.
I want a scene in Avatar where Jake Sully is strapped to, like, that machine, like, oh!
And that's my spine! Avatar spine!
The water is really a recurring thing. I mean, even the bath scene we talked about. Such a titular scene with the Bond girl that has to do with the way of the water.
And there's also the scene where Bond washes his wound in a sink. Where there's water coming out.
Wow. And there's also the moment where the bad guy is hiding in James Bond's shower and James Bond turns on the hot water and scares him.
And the sharks in the pool.
And can we, a brief aside, can we talk about the most, like, the classiest, like, art moment in the movie when, like, they throw, like, the underling, the shower guy, into the pool of sharks and then the entire screen just turns red?
Oh, yeah. I love
that. That is pretty cool.
This is the 60s.
Baby. On that note, I really liked, not just the song Thunderball, but the opening credits for this one were
it's the best opening sequence
so far. Very cool, stylized, sexy, like, it was good. It worked. And of course, Mr. Tom Jones crooning away.
Well, it's worth noting, speaking of the opening intro, this is the return of Maurice Binder, who started with Dr. No. He was gone from Russia with Love and Goldfinger, and that one, they're like, just bring some sexy ladies in here, we'll get a projector and project the credits on their boobs and stuff. That'll be fine.
And you know what? It works every time.
And it did work. Like, I did like those two intro scenes, but there's something about Maurice Binder's, like, I mean, this is the titular Bond opening, like silhouetted women dancing sexily and like weird stuff going on. And this one is just
weird stuff going on.
Well, I don't think we get into the weirdness yet, the more avant-garde Bond intros, because I feel like with later entries, you'll get kind of weird stuff, like, find its way into the not weird isn't bad, but just like,
no,
oh,
it'll
this
be
is
like you a Bond silhouette shoots a gun and then the bullet turns into like a card being flipped over, and then
it
like,
gets more
stuff
arty
like that.
Yeah. Whereas in this one it's cool looking, but it's simply just silhouetted girls like swimming or you know
you're like, you know,
around.
What looks cool is a lady underwater.
Some harpoon guns.
Yeah.
Holding our spear guns, yeah, and having like oxygen tanks on and stuff like that. Like we don't get the more avant-garde intro stuff until a little later in the series. But I like the Maurice Binder's back again. It gives the, and also I don't know if we mentioned this or not, but this is shot in widescreen. This is the first Bond film to be shot in widescreen like that, and it's also the first Bond film to be over 2 hours. I think a little bit to the movie's detriment, but I'm just saying. but it does give the film a sense of just this epic scope. And I think, again, that's one of the things I respond to with this movie. Not necessarily the underwater stuff, which puts me to bed for the most part, but just the I can appreciate like the Avatar-esque sense of scale to this movie. Like, it is impressive a lot of the time.
I want to say they used real sharks, like, for the movie, and there's like a note that the one of the production designer says that like there's like parts where like Sean Connery's like in there with the sharks, and they had like basically like a partition that was supposed to like divide the sharks from Connery, and the shark, like, during one of the shots, the shark broke through it, and Connery like was like fleeing a shark and was like seconds, like he had to like jump out of the pool.
Fucking
and
A.
Was like, the guy said he was like seconds away from being eaten by a shark.
I remember this because Connery gave this guy an earful afterwards. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
I would.
I probably would too.
Like, this is an instance where like a Christian Bale style like rant on the set would be justified.
You'd be like, hey, actually, please don't let a shark maul me.
The same guy also said that jetpack was real.
Yeah, that was real.
It was a real jetpack, yeah.
It was designed for the U.S. military when they were like, you know what? We should have
jetpacks. Well, and it was used by a guy who would show up at like the Super Bowl, I think, like in the halftime show with the jetpack. So it was actually a real jetpack.
The speaking of the sharks, though, and I did think this several times during like the underwater stuff where they would like shoot a shark, and I was like, do they actually do that? And it's the 60s, so they did multiple sharks, which is not good. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, not cool. See, they thought they were being cool in that moment. In the 60s, everyone was about just shooting sharks from their helicopters.
And this was pre-Jaws, even.
Yeah.
I have to mention one more just from the Chattopedia about these special effects. So, towards the end when they were doing the explosion of the boat, like when they're setting up the explosion of Largo's boat, the special effects supervisor was John Steers, and he used for the effect experimental rocket fuel. The Chattopedia
just what
says,
you wanna hear.
Ignoring the true power of the volatile liquid, Steers doused the entire yacht with it, took cover, and then detonated it. The resulting explosion shattered windows along Bay Street in Nassau, roughly 30
God.
Miles away.
30 miles.
30 miles, shattering windows.
How many people died in this?
Steers, it concludes, Steers went on to win an Academy Award.
Yeah, he did.
And I guess if no one exploded, then like, yeah, dude.
And for his use of experimental rocket fuel. Just tears.
Ignoring the true power of the volatile.
Oh, God.
Let me just douse this boat
all
with experimental
people in NASA
rocket fuel.
Are just like, da-da-da, like making some eggs. Oh, yeah, my God!
You hear underneath the Mongo tree playing, everyone's just relaxing, like, then kaboom!
Your windows explode. You go to your neighbor like, wait, what happened? Oh, my God, you too? Oh, my
is
God.
Is it World War III?
Holy shit, what's happening?
Wow,
they're filming a Bond.
That is the best example of this production just being like, we want everything bigger. Everything.
Bigger, louder, more sharks, more rocket fuel.
Yeah. Experimental rocket fuel.
Rocket fuel. Well,
the legit shit.
Let's talk. Well, there's a scene I want to talk about that is so funny to me that ultimately results in absolutely nothing. It's when Bond is reconnoitering the bottom of Largo's boat. He's taking pictures like, oh, there's an underwater hatch here with his special Q camera that could take pictures in the dark. He gets out of the water
special
after
Jacques
they start
Cousteau
like
camera.
After they start chucking grenades into the water and he's in, you know, they fish him out and he goes up to shore and he gets picked up by Agent Vulpa in her Mustang. And we get one of the craziest tense ? Scenes in the movie when she just starts to drive fast and he's just sort of like, you're driving pretty fast. Do you race you often or whatever he says? And she's like, oh, uncomfortable. And the music gets really tense. It gets to this crescendo. What's going to happen? Is she going to crash the car? Does she have a passenger ejector seat in her car? No, they just drive. They just pull up to the hotel. And that's it. It's like, what was this scene? Like, that scene could have been cut. I'm sorry.
Just being a little flirty.
Yeah, and it's not fun. Like, it's not skeet shooting. Like, that's just Bond having a good time with his best friend, Mr. Thunderball. This is just like, I guess they went on a scary drive.
It does kind of like set up the like the power dynamics that like
that's
she
true.
Can be in
that's
control
true.
Of Bond.
That's a good point.
Like,
take
I'm
him for
in control
a ride.
Now, Bond. I'm taking you. Yeah, there's even that line where it's right. Like, oh, you don't like going fast? It's like, I don't. Or you don't like being driven by women? I don't like being taken for a ride.
Well, guess what, buddy?
That's
what
right.
We're doing.
You nailed it. That's the reason this movie exists, is to establish the power dynamic. I take it back. Because she is cool in that scene where she's like, what, you got a problem with me driving 160 on this dirt road?
What are you, a pussy?
Underneath the mango trees.
Well, Bond, James Bond, you don't go underneath the mango tree.
Oh man, how great would it have been if she just cranks the mango tree song and she's like headbanging, like yes.
Yeah, she turns on the radio. She's like, yes, this is my song.
Pedal to the metal
song.
I would have liked a return of that song since we're going back to the Bahamas. Like, it would have been nice for that song to have made some appearance.
Like in the one background,
like pass a bar, yeah, and you hear just kind of like underneath the mango tree.
Because that song legitimately was a hit, and I think it stayed in the top of the tracks for a long time, if I'm not mistaken. At least in, like, Jamaica, but anyway.
Or Three Blind Mice.
Yeah, I would also accept Three Blind Mice.
The sleeper hit of the summer. But.
Yeah.
Three Blind Mice.
Well, shall we talk about the finale of this movie? The giant, the underwater chaos that ensues?
It's so stupid and great how they, like, there's how they just set up why there has to be an underwater fight.
Yep. What's going to happen?
Well, I think this is the second time in the series, and this will become an ongoing trope of the Bond movies, that the climax occurs between basically two warring armies. And Bond is in the middle.
The finest version of this is Moonraker.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Which we'll get to, but it's, you know, a space war.
But I do enjoy this trope in the series. Like, I don't think it's really happened in the more modern Bond movies. They kind of abandoned this a little bit. It's more Bond on his own. But this is just something, I don't know what it is. It's kind of like a showstopper moment. It's like, and now we're going to have the big climax with hundreds of extras. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of appreciate the old Hollywood-esque, like, grandeur of it.
Where it's like all the bad guys are in their black scuba suits and all the good guys are in their orange scuba suits. And here's Bond with his slutty little short shorts scuba suit.
And he's just whipping around, like doing hijinks, like taking people's, like,
it's,
tubes
it's hijinks,
out.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
love the realization of, like, so the bad guys are all in under scuba stuff and you see their army coming, but the realization when you just see all these people parachuting that, like, oh, they're about to parachute into the water and then dive underwater for an underwater fight.
That shot too, when it's over the water and you just see the, like, the parachutes kind of dropping in, and it's just cool. That beautiful you can see, like, the reef right underneath the boat. It's really gorgeous.
This is the moment in the screening when Nick stood up in his chair and started shouting, like, yes!
Is that gif of Orson Welles clapping?
Yeah! That's right, that was me.
Water battle.
Epic, so epic.
And this is also sped up as well.
Yeah, well, this part I think works a little bit more, a little bit better sped up than that first scene, because it's like underwater stuff is gonna be slower.
Yes,
just because you move slower underwater, you're not just, you know, chipmunk speed throwing vases around a room like.
And I think that's why I appreciate, out of all the underwater scenes, I appreciate the underwater climax the most, because they speed it up.
Yes.
Yeah. And, like, so much so where they give Bond, like, this special gigantic tank on the back of his, on his back that just lets him zoom around over there.
Yeah.
And it also happens to have, like, I don't know why, but it has, like, this orange trail of smoke that it leaves behind him. <It's> like, or yellow. It's either orange or yellow. I can't remember. Quite recall, but it's just him zipping around, and just like, again, like, there, it doesn't even seem like he's going, like, you would think James Bond is like, I gotta find Largo and the bombs and get them, but no, he's just like zipping around, like, you know, taking people's helm scuba masks off and cutting tubes and doing pranks, like, hey, I'll drop this little thing down here, the guys will follow, and then it'll blow up. it's just so goofy.
He's very strategic.
I mean, I like that he's helping out. You know, he's not taking his I'm on vacation mindset into this battle. He's like, no, I'm going to help. But
he's like, okay, I'm on duty.
Yeah, exactly. <Fine. laughs> I could show all the people back in the office that I'm a team player. Anyway, as I selfishly...
I know everyone doesn't like me because I'm constantly talking about being horny and gross, and but I, you know what? I can help. I'm a team player.
And then he finally gets on the boat. There's the giant explosion with the experimental rocket fuel that earns a man an Oscar. And then we get one of the funniest last moments of a Bond movie ever, in my opinion, when they just get, and this is kind of typical too, this will also become an ongoing thing of James Bond at the end of the movie, somehow in like an emergency raft, you know, in the water by himself with the lady. But in this one, it's particularly crazy because he just happens to have this thing where he hooks it onto the back of his neck. It this balloon comes up with this rope attached.
Yeah, this weird balloon arrow thing where it's like, come scoop us up.
Well, it's just like, this is how they'll get us out. Like, a plane will come by, it'll hook the rope, and then we will violently be jerked out of the
dragged behind this aircraft.
Like, this can't be the most efficient way to get them. It's just like, you know where they are.
I know, I assumed it was going to be a... like a Dr. No kind of thing of like, and then just hook it onto our little raft and pull us to safety. Well, but like, no, just drag us behind a jet.
Well, it's like, did they do this for all the people that survived? It's
like, no, I could tell that was Bond down there. They're like, okay, scoop him up.
We only got one plane. Guys, this is going to take a while to rescue all of you.
the bit at the end that was really funny, it was right before this, when it's Bond and Domino and the guy who helped her escape on the boat, and they're like, it's gonna crash into the rocks, jump. And Bond like looks up to that guy, he's like, who's this? And Domino's like, I don't know, but he helped me. And the guy's like, I can't swim. And Bond just hands him like a not, what is it called, just the like a life vest season. And he's just like, now's the time to learn, and pushes him into the water. We never hear from this guy again. He's definitely dead.
That's something we should mention. Before the boat explodes, it is going like 500 miles an hour on the water, apparently, and every moment it cuts, and this gets back to what I mentioned in our first Bondcast episode for Dr. No, with the terrible like projection photography,
yeah.
Like front screen or rear screen projection. Like when you see them in the cabin of this boat, the cockpit, whatever, it looks like they're going 500 miles an hour, and every time Largo tries to like control the wheel, he does it like super fast, and it just looks like a Looney Tunes cartoon.
Yeah, it looks like Looney Tunes or like a kid pretending to drive, of just like moving their hands all over the place. Yeah, this end bit is quite silly.
It's comical.
But but I do like that Domino gets to kill him, and that guy helped her out. That was nice.
Oh, and we forget, while this is happening, this madness on the boat, they're going 500 miles per hour. They've had to detach most of their boat to fight.
Detach, like, the cocoon.
Yeah, detach the cocoon with the turrets, the gun turrets. So while that's happening over there, they're on the boat going 500 miles an hour with one nuke, trying to escape. And while all this madness is going on in the main cabin or whatever, this guy walks in with champagne. He's like, so hey, we won, right? What? Ah!
Oh, geez. Oh, no.
That was like, I
was taking a nap. Sorry.
That I wonder if that moment was scripted or if that was just a moment where the director or somebody was like, you know, this scene is pretty crazy. What if we just upped it a bit by having a guy come in with champagne?
Hey!
Like, was that in the book of Thunderball when they're having they're having this climax on the boat when it's going 500 miles an hour and a guy with champagne randomly walks in? I wonder. But it's a great moment of silliness in a scene that is so stupid, but I kind of love it. And that's kind of Thunderball. Like, compared to our other episodes, I feel like we went into the synopsis a bit more. But with this movie, like I said, it's a vacation movie for Sean Connery and the character of James Bond. Like, it's very loose. It's very silly. Kind of a threadbare plot, really. It's not super convoluted. Like, they capture some nuclear missiles and they hold up ransom. And Bond has to go on vacation in the Bahamas yet again to find them. And that's kind of the movie.
We all have fun.
Yeah, I mean, what was your all's kind of impressions of this one? Like, what were your final takeaways?
I liked it. I thought it was, like I said, I mean, the bar was a little bit low for me after Goldfinger. And, like, you know, as we talked about the just literal assault of, you know, everything in that one, that I, you know, like I said, it was kind of nice that, Domino and Volpa were both just kind of like cool characters who got to do some stunts and got some kills. And, I like that, but, you know, at the end of the day, it didn't horrify me in too many ways. So, you know, thumbs up. And the water stuff was goofy, but it was very fun.
I also kind of, speaking of Volpa, I appreciate that she got kind of a cue car, sort of. Like, she has that motorcycle with the rockets. That was cool.
It's a do cool ship. And I liked it.
Well, Mike, what about you?
I liked it. I would put this, like, below Goldfinger for me. Maybe below Dr. No, but above From Russia with Love, I think. Yeah, it's like, it's flawed for sure. Like, it's like the typical, like, story of excess, you know, the good and the bad that comes with it. But yeah. But I had a fun time watching it. It's definitely the most, like, cartoony of them. And yeah, I agree with Jackie. Like, the lows in this movie are not quite as low as, like, some of the others. So that's nice.
At least James Bond asks before he molests. I mean, he still molests, but he does ask once before, like, in a well, no, that's not good either.
Yeah, you don't have to defend it. It's fine.
What does he say? The line, he's like, what will it take for you to see things my way? Or no, that's Goldfinger. Never mind. I'm mixing up my rape scenes.
Wow. But yeah, we got an eye patch villain, so that's cool.
Always good.
Always great.
Yeah, the underwater stuff for me, like, I it was mostly cool, but my problem with it was sometimes it was, like, hard to follow what was going on. But on that, yeah, it was fun. It was a fun time. This is one I bet, like, a younger person, I mean, you'd probably want to talk to them about what's okay and what's not okay about what Bond is doing. But that aside, like, I could see, like, a kid, like,
you turn to your child and you're like, and don't shoot sharks. Don't do that.
And like, don't use experimental rocket fuel for
a stunt. That.
Unless you want to win an Academy Award.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Unless you're cool.
Unless you're cool.
Well, Nick, how does Thunderball stack up for you? When was the last time you watched it before the screening?
With you.
Oh, wow. It's that long?
Yeah, so that's the last time I saw it.
Wow.
Do you still think this is, like, up there with, like, Seventh Seal, 2001, A Space Odyssey.
No, it's funny too because back in the day when Dave saw my original 4-star rating like that, I was a lot more generous back then. I don't think it's as great as I once did, but I still think it's pretty fun. I like the underwater scenes. I don't know why. That's just kind of, I think
they're cool.
Exploratory, I don't know. Just, I like that stuff. And then I think it's the other cartoony stuff makes the movie kind of breezy. So
are you saying that your controversial 4-star Letterboxd review has now dropped to a more reasonable 3.5-star review?
Well, actually, if I'm what I would rate it now is 3.
Oh, wow. Wow. Hold on. Are you saying I rated Thunderball higher than you now?
Now it is, yeah.
Oh,
if
my
you're sticking
God.
With the 3.5, yeah.
Oh, my God.
This is a plot twist.
It's just a good, fun movie, that's all. So.
Yeah.
I gave it 3.5.
Wow, what a Shyamalan-esque twist we have here on the Thunderball.
Well, it's still on the positive side. It's
so
not,
Dave,
it's
why
not...
do you love Thunderball so much? And Nick, why do you hate it now?
What a twist.
What a twist.
What a twist.
Well, I'm very interested to see what your guys' take on the next film in the Bond series will be, You Only Live Twice. I mean, just
this one gets a little very racist, right?
Yeah, so now we're going from sexism to racism.
Cool. The 60s.
I mean, I will say, just context-free, I do really enjoy the song from You Only Live Twice. It's a really good one.
I don't know how that... Who does that one?
Nancy Sinatra.
It's a good one.
This is banger. The last of the like run of the Connor. I know he comes back, but like this is like the capstone of the run, isn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, and I did see like we were talking about like the timeline of how he felt about it. It from the Chattopedia, it looks like by the end of filming, he was like over it.
he said, "I'm gonna take my money and leave."
He didn't do any interviews. Like he did one. He did one interview. Like and didn't. Turned down like tons of offers for other interviews, and apparently like journalists were like at the filming all the time when they were like filming on location, and he hated it.
Yeah, sounds annoying.
The only interview he gave, of course, was to Playboy.
Of course.
But of course.
Well, that makes sense because as we mentioned on the episode, they were cranking out a Bond movie a year from 1962 to 1965 when Thunderball came out. However, after this movie wrapped, it would be 2 whole years before the next James Bond adventure, and that would be the supposed end of Connery's run as James Bond.
Wow. Well, you only live twice.
You only live twice, man. Know what I mean? But the James Bond...
Oh, he says it in the movie.
First off, I just want to say, Nick, thanks for joining us on the Thunderball episode. It was great having you back, and I am shocked that I now apparently enjoy this movie more than you do. I did not see that coming.
Yeah. Who could have guessed? But thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime, dude. You can stop by anytime. You could double park in front of the store however much you want.
I want to thank you this time for leaving your marauding raiders outside of the store.
Yes, that was very classy. Sure.
Yeah, just, you know, felt like acting like...
I do see them in the window. It looks like they're offloading our supplies of live wire.
Our experimental rocket live wire?
Rocket fuel live wire.
Oh, I was saving that.
Experimental do.
The audacity of your crew.
Come on. We're saving that for my birthday.
Well, the Apocalypse Video Bondcast will return in You Only Live Twice.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da.
Thunderball is Mr. Thunderball.
Drive you mad. Unless, of course, it's that mink glove of yours.
I'll shut out the noise.